RCR with Paul Brennan.
All right, let's have another Money Talks here at RCR. Simon Angelo from Wealth Morning, CEO and publisher, is back with us. What a great time to be talking with Simon. Hi, Simon. How you doing?
Yes, good morning, Paul. I'm doing very well. It's been pretty volatile out there. I think we were up to 11:30 last night on the European markets. It's not every week someone comes along and tries to recalibrate the entire global trading system.
Is that what he's doing?
Yes, well, it hasn't really worked since the Second World War. And I think the US was pushed into a position where they kind of had no choice. I mean, if you consider the fact that inequality in the US has grown to levels like never before, I think Scott Bessent flagged in one of his talks that last year more Americans flew business class to Europe than ever before. But on the other side of the equation, more Americans had to access a food bank.
Yeah.
So you've kind of got nothing in the middle, well, not so much in the middle anymore. And we know from ancient history, you know, the Roman Empire, when you lose your middle class and people making things, society begins to fall apart.
Not so good. Not so good.
Not so good at all. And I mean, you think back, America invented the PC, the personal computer. It no longer makes any personal computers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Problem is, when you have manufacturing ripped out of your country, it affects middle and working class communities. It affects purpose in those communities. I mean, I grew up in Taranaki around dairy factories, and that produced a lot of innovation. I remember a guy built the first video game that you plugged into your TV. I was 7 or 8 years old in the 1980s, and people worked on cars and built boats. And it was actually a hive of innovation that comes with factories and manufacturing.
Saw a picture the other day of Ponsonby in the early 70s, a street in Ponsonby, and there were three cars in the shot, and they were all being worked on during some lazy afternoon and the weekend. It reminded me of, first of all, the DIY nature of all that, but nothing was that reliable then. Now it's, you know, you forget it, right?
True. Machinery did require more work back then, but I guess the point is it was also a centre of innovation.
Well, there were three mechanics in the street, you know, sort of like 20-some guys, and they all knew how it all worked, obviously.
Yeah, I think you've got to bring those jobs back, because we're also facing an AI crunch in white-collar work.
Yeah.
So if you suddenly rip out a lot of the sort of mid-level white-collar work that accountants, lawyers, customer service people do, you need other jobs. And a lot of that innovative manufacturing can be very productive and very satisfying.
Bring back car assembly, I say. Okay, so Trump and the method in the madness, as it's being reported. There are tariffs everywhere, but they have a massive debt. They have interest rates impacting on the repayment of that debt. Are all these things working together? Are they all linked?
I think the very high debt the US carries is a consideration, 125% of GST, of GDP. The interest bill about to exceed the defense budget. So if you can raise a lot more tax without having to disincentivize workers and companies, I mean, tariffs are one way to do it. And that could, I mean, it's also increasing the strength of the US dollar, which helps. And at one point it lowered treasury yields, so it's lowering interest rates as well. So yes, it does all work in tandem. But I think the point that's being missed here, and there's been a huge amount of noise from the globalist media and Wall Street pundits, which has helped to drag down the market, and it's been disappointing, but these tariffs are reciprocal.
Mm.
So he's looking at not only what other countries charge America, but also other barriers in place. And if you consider game theory, everybody's in the game together, and the actions of one affects the actions of another. So by definition, the first to put up their hand and want to negotiate is probably going to get the best outcome. And well, at the moment, that's Japan. They've come
Oh, okay.
forward, and it looks like they will get priority in negotiations. I do believe our side has reached out to the US side. I did hear an interview with Chris Hipkins, and he seemed to be saying that, well, our GST wasn't really a tariff. I would say to him, if you want to order a box of sausage rolls from the United States, and it comes into New Zealand, the GST of 15% on your sausage rolls works the same as a tariff. So that's where the reciprocal nature come in. And perhaps there's reason there to look at things like the app tax. I mean, we slapped 15% GST on Airbnb.
Yeah. Even though it's benefiting Kiwis, some would say.
Exactly.
So is he right when he says it's an issue of fairness in the end, on that reciprocation thing you're talking about? I mean, if it's not fair, you can make a pretty good argument that it should be fair.
Well, that's why I point out that for 70 years the global trading system has not worked. And the US buys about 34% of household goods worldwide. So there nobody buys like America. They're a very, very hard market to replace. They buy a lot more than Europe and a lot more again than China, which has really relied on export growth.
He also seems to be getting direct investment in the door quite quickly as well, to quite eye-watering levels. Do you want to speak about that?
Well, absolutely. And I mean, take the example of a car maker like Mercedes. In the EU, they are facing net zero. By 2035, they are meant to convert to EVs only EVs.
Wow, yeah.
They've just put out the new Mercedes V8, which people love, and they make all their money off petrol and diesel cars. So Trump's saying to them, you've already got factories in America. I'll give you work visas. I'll give you electricity that's a quarter of the price. If the EU's not working for you, come and make your cars here with no tariffs.
Yeah, what a move, what a move. And overnight, in relation to the time we're talking, the EU, von der Leyen's come out and said zero for zero on industrial, what, industry or industrial imports, not extending to agriculture or anything. So they've caved, kind of, right?
Well, the EU, of course, is made up of, 20 plus member states, and they all have to reach agreement. And some are more on Trump's side, perhaps like Italy and Hungary, and some like France don't appear to be. So it's about pulling them all together. But as I say, game theory, the smart response is to consider all players in the game. And in this case, when you're dealing with the largest consumer market, and in many cases, the largest market for your products, it pays to negotiate and get a win-win situation. And I think that's the upside for markets. I mean, there's been this huge amount of noise, which is disappointing, and globalist media running around like their hair's on fire.
Yeah.
But actually,
Yeah.
if we can get deals starting to come through, the end of the world has been delayed again.
I saw a few comments from Warren Buffett in the last few days. And what he was saying in relation to this, and that there was a day or two ago, is that if you're in stocks and you can't handle them going down at any point, don't be in stocks.
Yeah, well, it is a psychological game. And as Warren Buffett says, in the short run, the market is a voting machine. But in the long run, it's a weighing machine. So
Yeah.
I think you've got to look at this long term. Yes, we are living through very interesting times. We've had COVID. Now we've got a rewrite of the global trade system. But in the longer term time horizon, this is just going to be another blip on the radar.
Okay, so it's what, chickens I'll mix metaphors. Chickens with their hair on fire, running around everywhere, and the reporting is quite grim locally, I see, as well as you would predict. How long before it kind of settles down, do you think?
We're in uncharted territory. It did start. I mean, I was at the trading desk till 11:30 last night. Europe opened very, very dark, and it did settle down. America's been slightly up this morning. It's really looking for news on whether interest rates are going to come down, and also what trade deals are going to come through. China threatened to, well, China has retaliated, and then Trump threatened to escalate that retaliation with a further 50% tariff, but that didn't seem to move the markets too much more downward. So maybe a lot of that fear has already been priced in.
Yeah, so where does this leave China, do you think, in the game theory part for China?
They have a smaller consumer market than even the EU. Over 50% of their GDP, I understand, comes from exports. Their whole business model has been built on exporting as much as they can cheaply to the rest of the world. Their biggest customers are the US and Europe. Their economy was already suffering deflation, and high property debt. So I think they're in a very difficult place at the moment. They'll be looking to who else they can sell their goods to. Can they devalue the yuan further? Can they devalue their currency? Yeah, it'll be a difficult place, and that affects us. You've seen the New Zealand dollar crumble to one of the lowest levels we've seen in a long time, and really that's because of our exposure to the China market, and the same goes to Australia too, Australia as well. But I mean, look, there will be upside. I mean, perhaps if you're selling beef and US beef producers aren't selling as much in China, people don't want to pay the tariff. There may well be more demand for New Zealand beef in that case.
So we have to sort of tread a fine line between the US and China and how we kind of do things.
Well, economically, with our export base so dependent on China, yes.
Yeah, so if they make any moves, like let's say they encircle Taiwan again, I mean, we can't criticize them too hard, but we'll have pressure on the other side saying, well, you know, if we need to do anything, you Five Eyes, you're in. It's
Well,
good
let's be
sign.
realistic. Australia and New Zealand are largely defenceless. And we
Yeah.
saw that recently when destroyers come down to this part of the world. So we do very much need a strong US, and we do need to value that long-standing partnership that we have with them.
And I see we just upped our spend on defense to two, promised anyway, 2% of GDP, but I mean, what can we buy that will really stop anyone, really?
We are in a strategic location, and we can be seen to be pulling our weight.
Okay, fair. Good answer. Where were you on Black Monday in 87?
Yeah, that was a dark day for this country. I wasn't in the markets yet. I was starting the third form.
Okay.
So I've had
Well,
a
do you have
few.
any consciousness of it?
Yeah, I started buying shares 3 or 4 years later.
Okay. Yeah.
But I remember the scarring that this caused to investors, and we still hear about it in our business today. I mean, New Zealand was hit worse than any other country. I think from October to February, the NZX fell almost 60%.
Yeah, that's
Just
massive.
before the crash in 1987, the NZX reached its highest level, and if you take out dividends, it's never got there again.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. So that
So, I
was a
mean, with
real
so
bubble.
much illusory wealth floating around up until that crash, and
Everybody was bitten by it, Simon. Everyone.
yeah.
And they just go nuts. They were going to the bank and borrowing money. Almost weekly basis to buy more shares. And the banks, they were lending it.
Yes, well, I heard about a case where a farmer borrowed on his farm. The interest rates back then were about 19%, and he was asked, "Well, what did you put the money into?" And he said, "Brayley shares."
Yeah.
But you're right, it was a combination of easy finance that had been deregulated and also quite high interest rates, 18 or 19% back then. And when it crashed in October, 19th October 87, of course, with those sort of rates, any leverage just cleans you out.
Is there anything contemporary that kind of is part of that legacy, or that we can see a familiar thing? There are a lot of restaurants around at the time that that crash happened too. They were everywhere, not so much after that.
Well, it's interesting you should say that. I've just finished Tony Astle's book, Let Them Eat Tripe. And of course, he ran Antoine's and Parnell for 49 years. And
Wow.
if you've ever had a meal or two there, it's absolutely fantastic. But he talks about before the crash in 87, when there was so much wealth floating around, he would find $100 notes on the bathroom floor that had been rolled up to snort coke.
Oh dear.
And after the crash, they were $5 bills.
Yeah. I was still
So.
snorting though, were they?
Yeah. So that shows you just how quickly things can change.
Yeah, boy, did they change. And it got quite miserable. I remember the BNZ had to go to the government for 600 million after that, just to stay in business.
Yes. Well, it was quickly exposed just how illusory a lot of the wealth was. And I think that memory has affected a lot of investors. It certainly means for us in our business, we're very, very wary of paying high prices for businesses. And a lot of those companies, people were buying them at earnings ratios of 50 or 60 times, which means if the earnings don't grow, it takes you 50 or 60 years to pay for the business that you've bought. So if
Yeah,
you look at that
that's a good point.
through that lens, it was completely crazy. And then, yeah, leveraging at 19%. So it was no wonder that the house of cards came tumbling down, but it's left its scars.
So, what are the lessons then from that era?
Well, whenever I finish at the trading desk and I've had a stressful time like last night, I collapse on the couch and watch Country Calendar.
It's like an
And
antidote, is it?
it just absolutely relaxes me because I see people doing real things like farming organic beef or producing a whole lot of free-range eggs. And I guess to answer your question, Paul, that's the lesson. Buy quality businesses that own good property, that are making real things that people want to buy. Be careful of these businesses that are speculating and involved in takeovers and restructures and $100 bills in Parnell, because that's where things come unstuck for New Zealand in 1987, in my view.
You've got to keep the memory alive, kind of, to keep an awareness of that, don't you?
You do. And I mean, you learn from your dark times. So whilst I started investing when the dust had settled in sort of 1990, 1991, I have been through the GFC where markets fell 50%. And you look back then, and one of the only companies that didn't fall at all was McDonald's. Because when things go hard and the economy falls apart, people still want to buy a Big Mac.
Or a happy meal.
Yeah. Got
Stay
to keep
happy.
you've got to keep the kids happy when the parents are stressed.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And then, of course, COVID. That was a different animal again because we were scrambling around with this deep fear of how can businesses run when they're locked down. But I think what you've got to do, Paul, the main lesson is just sweep aside the noise because there's just so many people claiming it's the end of the world and their hair's on fire and the market's going to crash and everyone's going to lose their money. But you know what? You will survive. You will survive.
I will survive. What's that song?
Great song, Aretha Franklin.
Yeah. Now, Gloria Gaynor, I got you on that one.
Oh, was
Yeah, you're close
it?
though. I read just the other day that Macca's in the States is bringing out an adult Happy Meal.
I like the sound of that.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. I wonder what's going to be happy about it. Maybe they're not the nutritional value or
It won't be
just
that.
the.
They get a little one of those little toys, adult toy though, you know.
I see where you're going with this.
All right, anything more to say about what is happening right now? Because we'll talk about it some more, I'm sure, as we go on in time. But in any last words, any bit of advice, anything, Simon, on this?
Just enjoy being a citizen of the world and living through some exciting times. That, yes, can be dark, but there's also upside. Look for the opportunity and whatever happens. So we're taking the other side of the trade. It's not time to sell for us. It's time to pick up bargains. And this is a market that doesn't go on sale very often. We may get some things wrong. It can be a little bit scary. We are in uncharted territory, but stay curious and enjoy the ride as much as you can. And don't get anxious. You know, anxiety, you can sit in a rocking chair and rock it back and forwards, but that won't get you anywhere. You've got to get out of the chair and do something.
Well said, actually. I go along with all of that. Well, good to catch up with you again, Simon Angelo from Wealth Morning, Money Talks. Talk again soon, Simon.
Yeah, that's great, Paul. And if people want to explore more of our research on the subject and get John's free book on China and the BRICS, wealthmorning.com is where we're at.